Aloha, I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. Welcome to The Body Show. Each week we talk about health and fitness, but nothing really replaces a visit to your own primary care provider. Have you heard about hepatitis C? A couple of years ago, there was a great medical treatment that was found to eradicate hepatitis C, particularly in those individuals who previously had been infected, may never knew it, and if they were tested and found to be positive, there was now a cure. Why are we concerned about hepatitis? Well, hepatitis C in a small portion of the population can lead to serious consequences like liver cancer. And those are some of the things that if we could figure out, treat, and find a way to help avoid having people suffer, of course we want to do it. But when this medication first came out, there were some coverage policies that didn't necessarily seem to be what we're following now. And there's definitely a track in how some of the health care policy that we look at follows medical policy, but also follows some wonderful cooperation with people in the legislature. Now, today, I have Nikos Leverins. He is from the Hawaii Health and Harm Reduction Center, and he's the Grants and Advancement Manager. And we're going to talk a little bit about the story of hepatitis and how this led to some effects and changes in healthcare policy, and what does that mean for patients right now today. So thank you for joining me in the studio.
Mahalo. It's great to be here today with you.
Now, hepatitis C, it's something that, you know, there's a lot of different hepatitis out there. Some people may not realize A, B, C. There's a D. They think they found H. They continue with the alphabet along those lines. But most commonly, we think about A, B, and C. A, food and water exposure. B, blood and body fluids. C, same thing. And there are some risky behaviors and or even just lifestyle things that can put people at risk for the hepatitis B and C and some other subsequent types of hepatitis. Now, a few years back, there was a great medication that was discovered, Harvoni. This was a medication that was found to eradicate hepatitis C, but there was a little bit of trouble with accessing it. It was fairly expensive. Not everybody had access to it. Now, that led to some other initiatives to try and expand the access to this medication. And that's why we're going to have this discussion today, because it took not just medical science and the advancements in what we know about hepatitis, but it also took a cooperative interaction with the legislature to really make sure that we were offering access to the people who needed it the most. Tell me the story of hepatitis C from harm and reduction.
Well, from the harm reduction perspective, people, you know, who inject drugs and their intimate partners are at heightened risk of contracting hepatitis C. And, you know, as you mentioned, viral hepatitis is it's a disease of the liver. It's inflammation. If left untreated, it can cause cirrhosis and liver cancer. So it was all of our hepatitis work at Hawaii Health and Harm Reduction Center came from the CHOW Project, which is our state-funded syringe access program. It's still a very groundbreaking program where we provide sterile syringes to folks who inject drugs to prevent HIV. It's been proven to work for over 30 years, and it's so great to see Jack Lewin back in town. Jack Lewin was the was the head of our health department when it was implemented. Syringe Exchange first came on board through the Life Foundation in the Rubber Room in the mid 80s. So, as you mentioned, hepatitis treatment used to be radically expensive. It used to be, you know, quite different. It used to be interferon at one point, and people had a really hard time with it. And then we have this new treatment on board, but it took, you know, the drug was not yet as effective as it is right now. So we're at a point now where the CDC has declared viral hepatitis to be a winnable battle, and there's emphasis on hepatitis C. The CDC recommends that every adult now, not just those of the so-called boomer age, be tested for hepatitis C at least once in their lifetime. And if they are reactive and they are positive for hep C, there is curative treatment available. And the question is, how do we get more people tested, and how do we get them linked to care?
So now you mentioned that the previous treatment for hepatitis included interferon, and that was a great medication, but very difficult to tolerate. A lot of people had problems with side effects and reactions to it, and it wasn't as effective as some of the later therapies are. So now we know that there's oral therapy. You take it for a delineated amount of time, somewhere between 8 to 12 weeks, and at the end of that time frame, you should see almost complete eradication of the hepatitis C virus, which will hopefully lead to either some prevention of some of the sequelae of long-term infection or reversal. In some cases, the liver actually shows that it can regenerate and heal a bit. So there are some things that we definitely look at positively when we think about someone who has the potential to do treatment, and it's very, very successful. I mean, the rates of eradication are fairly significant. Now, there used to be a recommendation that, as you mentioned, the CDC used to say if you were born between 1945 and 1965, you should be tested for hepatitis C once in your lifetime at least. And they've expanded that and said, you know what, everybody over the age of 18 really ought to be tested to see if they've been exposed. There are some groups that might have a higher risk, those that may have gotten tattoos way back in that generation that we were seeing for a while, that was the highest rates we were seeing in that 45 to 65 birth year cohort. People who received a lot of blood transfusions prior to having them be tested for hepatitis C, which may have happened back in the 70s or 80s, or even some of the early 80s. There's other risk factors, lifestyle risk factors, medical professionals, they're at risk because if you get a needle stick, that could be a problem. Also, some people with a history of drug use. So it wasn't necessarily just one cohort. It kind of crossed the span of several different types of physical activities or lifestyle habits or occupations where you could be at risk. Was Hawaii doing well in terms of hepatitis, or were we a little bit behind in our rates of identification and treatment?
The short answer is we don't really know, because we don't really have a good system of surveillance here. And this is one of the things that our community group, HepFree Hawaii, which is co-directed by our executive director, Heather Lusk, and a hepatitis viral hepatitis specialist with the Harm Reduction Services Branch, Thaddeus Pham, they're co-directors, and they convene the community to find out, well, how can we get a better sense of how much hepatitis is out there, and how can we marshal, you know, our community, including those in the policymaking process, to get our surveillance together, one, and two, to more effectively link people to vaccination in the case of hepatitis C, and then to screening, diagnosis and treatment in the case of hepatitis C. One of the real hallmarks of HepFree Hawaii is its ongoing Micronesian Education Liver Wellness Program. As you know, those from Asia and from the Pacific have a increased incidence of hepatitis. And it's very important to get information out there in, you know, language appropriate materials. We unfortunately saw this with COVID too. Our Micronesian communities were not adequately engaged in the initial stages of the pandemic, and they wound up paying the price for that. So getting surveillance, we had a policy recommendation after a legislative briefing that we had this past fall. That was literally 5 years in the making. Thank you, pandemic and other things. And one of our recommendations is to have, you know, another specialist in the Department of Health that is dedicated to surveillance. And I believe they have another epidemiologist who just came on board. I met her via Zoom very briefly, but it's been a very, very busy year for me on many fronts. So, yeah.
Oh, it sounds like it has been. And certainly the effort to understand who needs to be treated is based on figuring out who has it. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. You're listening to The Body Show. When we come back, I'm going to continue my discussion with Nikos Levrenes, and we are going to discuss some other issues regarding hepatitis, what's out in the legislature right now, and what are some of the areas that we could improve on right here locally at home. We'll be right back.
Support for The Body Show comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training, and the Rice Partnership.
Welcome back to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak, and I'm here today with Nikos Levrenes, and he's from the Hawaii Health and Harm Reduction Center. And we're talking a little bit about What are the ways in which Hawaii can improve with surveillance and treatment for hepatitis? Hepatitis A, food and water exposure, there is a vaccine for it. Hepatitis B, this is blood and body fluid exposure, there is also a vaccine for it, a series of three. And hepatitis C, for which we have a really good treatment option available that has transformed the treatment for hepatitis C. I mean, it truly has made it something that could be a curable condition, which is super exciting. The newer medications have come out in the last few years. There are generic medications available. And for populations of people who qualify, those who have positive findings of hepatitis in their system, this medication is something that really could be a game changer for them. Now, originally, when it first came out, it was specific genotypes or certain types of hepatitis that responded to certain medications and different levels of liver damage that people had to qualify for in order to start doing the treatment. And now a lot of that is taken away. The medications have advanced. Any genotype, any level of fibrosis or hardening of the liver, anyone who has positive values for hepatitis is eligible to do some of the treatment, which is fantastic. Where are the populations that we're missing? I often hear about folks that are in the jail system, in the incarceration system, where they don't seem to have access to the treatment, and yet these are people who may have a high risk of hepatitis C, and therefore, when they are released, be at risk of exposing the rest of the community. Mm-hmm. So are there populations or subsets of populations where we really need to put out a much greater effort to try and identify who those individuals are and treat them?
Oh, absolutely. You mentioned jail inmates, and anybody who is in a carceral facility should have the opportunity to be screened for hepatitis and to be treated for hep C while they're there in the facility, if they're there for a sufficient amount of time. We also see viral hepatitis amongst our unsheltered homeless population. Very difficult to get them into regular medical care. This is something that as you know, the homelessness services provider for Urban Oahu and the Upper Windward Coast and North Shore, this population is very close to our heart at Hawaii Health and Harm Reduction Center. But people do have agency and autonomy, and if given the opportunity, they will make decisions that are best for them. In terms of accessing screening and care, medical transportation is such a huge issue. You know, for the unsheltered homeless, and even for people who aren't unsheltered. So there are a range of issues that to be dealt with in terms of linking people to screening and care.
Now, there have been some legislative efforts to improve that, and you helped co-write one of the bills that passed in the legislature in the last year or two. What were those about? What were they trying to do?
Well, basically, we offered House Concurrent Resolution 205, which was offered by the chair of the Health Committee, Della Alba Lotti, and we wanted to convene an informational briefing so that both sides of the Hawaii legislatures, House and Senate, had a better sense of what progress we've made on hepatitis, but also what more needs to be done. We already talked about surveillance, and that's very important in terms of building surveillance infrastructure. We need to find ways to ensure that more people are getting vaccinated for hepatitis B, particularly amongst populations like the Asian American community or the Asian community, as well as the Pacifica community, have access to vaccination, including, I believe, maternal vaccination right now, so mothers need not transmit hepatitis B to their infants in utero. And we also thought that with this opioid settlement money, which Representative Bilotti is now taking the lead on, at least legislatively, that some of the monies in there should be used to screen and treat for hepatitis.
And the reason is because the populations might be similar, or there's a subset.
Correct.
Of people who may be at risk for hepatitis C.
Correct.
Who may have been affected by
right.
opioids.
People who use illicit drugs, basically. And that often includes people who kind of smoke, in addition to people who inject drugs of some type.
So the idea would be that might be a population for whom, if they were to access treatment, that could be a way to test them for hepatitis.
Right.
Historically, have there been issues with getting the medication? I know that there may be some insurance issues, whether it be Medicaid or Medicare or commercial insurance. Has that also been a barrier?
Well, historically, yes, it has been a barrier. There used to be a sobriety requirement, which got lifted a few years ago. We also got a very poor grade on a national report card put out by the National Viral Hepatitis Roundtable in Harvard Law School, I believe, that specifically pointed to our prior authorizations. So soon after that report card came out, some movement was made on that front.
What changed?
You're getting to a level of detail. I can't.
Something changed, but it was for the
better. Something changed for the better, but we're not quite there yet.
Okay.
I believe it was the Medicaid waiver, one of the Medicaid waivers.
Okay. Because I know that when we think about the population of people who may actually have been exposed to hepatitis, they may be in a situation where their coverage is through some of the government payers. And in that case, federally having mandates that require coverage may help with local state-based coverage. But then there's a whole nother element of non-governmental insurance, commercial insurance, et cetera. And I know that there's a lot of information out there about requirements for prior authorization. I know that this particular medication for this treatment is in a specialty pharmacy. So when it is at that level, you need to have a certain ability to monitor and contain that and provide advanced educational services for people on these medications. So it does still exist in a specialty arena. The good news is that some of the medications are now generic and much more cost effective. And so if there's a coverage issue, then I think the concern about the cost may be overcome by the availability of some of the generic medications that are out there.
Yes, most definitely. And I just looked at my notes here. And in terms of the positive development, MedQuest did issue a memo in late 2022 that to medical providers that removes prior authorization requirements for treatment regimens following the guidelines of the AASLD, IDSA, whatever that may mean. So, yeah.
Well, and the idea is that if you're following a standard treatment regimen and you're following the instructions, it's a medication you take on a daily basis, again, about 8 or 12 weeks. And so if you can follow those guidelines and those routines, then it really should be easier to access. And that was,
sure,
I think, the goal, is to make sure that if you're following a standard protocol, we should be right up there with coverage for that protocol. All right, I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. You're listening to The Body Show. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion on what's next. And beyond hepatitis C, are there ways in which we could see expanded access to improve the care of populations of people who are at risk for various elements of disease that could be treated? We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Support for The Body Show comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Anchor Systems Maui.
Welcome back to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak, and today I'm here with Nikos Leverins. He is the Grants and Advancement Manager from Hawaii Health and Harm Reduction Center. And we're talking today about hepatitis C, but also about legislative efforts to coordinate the medical and legislative action to help with what the CDC has declared as a winnable battle. They've stated that hepatitis is something that we can win. We can actually figure out how to reduce transmission and cure. So we do know that there are available vaccinations for certain types of hepatitis. There's treatment for other types, particularly treatment for hepatitis C. There is a distinct mandate from the CDC and, in fact, the legislature to really look at trying to identify patient populations with hepatitis C and provide them the opportunity for treatment. What's next? What would you think would be the next way that we could improve either identification, monitoring, surveillance, and or access? And beyond hepatitis, what else could we do?
When it comes to viral hepatitis, I think we need to take a very holistic approach. And your listeners should be aware that we do have a viral hepatitis elimination strategy called HepFree 2030. And the basic prongs of that is, one, to increase awareness about the problem and to let public and the policymakers know about it, increase access to needed services, increase advocacy at all levels, and that includes the state level and the federal level. We've seen some very positive movement from the federal government in this regard. And we do have support from our congresspeople for the HEP-free 2030 elimination strategy. We need to promote equity in everything that we do in terms of, you know, surveillance, in terms of education, in terms of advocacy. And we need to always get more data and have that data inform our decision making. As we noted at the beginning of this show, we still don't have a good grip of, you know, how much hepatitis is out there in our community right now. So to the extent that we can get more people tested and more people linked to care and more people vaccinated, we can work toward a viral hepatitis elimination, at least for B and C, in the years ahead. We're in a tough budget pinch right now in the state government especially, but we just need to keep the fires burning, so to speak. It took us a while to even get this informational briefing, but the investments in public health on this front will really decrease the costs at the back end when people have, you know, cirrhosis or liver cancer. We have among the highest liver cancer rates in the nation, unfortunately. So we need to get people screened and linked to care if they need it. And that has to be kind of the centerpiece of our hepatitis elimination strategy, along with vaccination for hepatitis B.
And I know that medically, if you get diagnosed with Hep A or Hep B or Hep C, if you haven't had full vaccination for any one of those, particularly B, for C yet, then you want to get vaccinated.
Yes.
Because if you have hepatitis B, and that has not been found to be as curable as hepatitis C, you don't want to get A on top of that. That could really strain your liver to a point where there'd be significant consequences. So we do have, once you get identified as a patient with hepatitis, it may be easier to improve vaccination. But boy, wouldn't it be great to get upstream and not have people get hepatitis. I often find that in addition to the vaccination, if we had an easier test, if we had something that wasn't requiring a blood sample going to a lab and could still be accurate. You know, I look to some of the changes we've seen and some of the over-the-counter availability of testing for active infection, particularly for COVID or for flu. These are tests that were for flu was available and still is, but we don't yet have it available at Long's. You can't go there and say, let me buy some flu testing kits. I would love to see a point where there could be a test that's developed where people could even take it home and do the test on their own.
I mean, home testing would be, you know, something that would be remarkable. We see this in the HIV front. People can take their HIV test at home, send it in, and link up with their provider thereafter. I think there is some movement. I've heard a little bit, and the level of detail I don't know, is but that you can use a dried blood sample and put it on a card, and some information can be found from that. But I can't really go into the details on that, but I think it's an emerging technology. I'm not sure if we're quite there yet.
I hope we get there.
Yeah.
Because that immediate testing and empowering people to do the testing in their privacy of their own home. And then the next step is the immediacy of results.
Sure.
For a while, they've had you can send away and send in a sample and get an HIV test done and get the results with hooking up with your provider. But boy, wouldn't it be great if you could get immediate results? They would just have to be accurate enough that it would indicate that you have a problem and therefore speak to a provider and have that back end follow up available should somebody not expect to get a positive result and wind up having one. So that's certainly something that I'd love to see in the future, is ease and availability of testing. Vaccinations, always something that I'm a big proponent of. First day of medical school, I had not yet had hepatitis B vaccination because I was born at an age when We didn't do this as a standard. These days, if you're born, you get your hepatitis shots as an infant. But, you know, I remember my first day, they said, okay, you don't have documentation of vaccination. Today's shot day one. And everybody got lined up and we went to the health center and got our first shot. And we had to do three shots before we were considered immune. But these days it's a little bit easier because it's part of the childhood vaccination series. But that's only B. And it doesn't necessarily include A, and it doesn't we don't have a vaccine yet for C. So trying to find some of these things and allow the medical technology to help protect the population at risk and also prevent the infection really would be ideal. What would be your dream if you could write the future? What would you want to see?
Oh, I would definitely like to see a surveillance system that actually, you know, captured real-time data as to, you know, who was carrying, you know, hepatitis of the various strains in our community. And from that, we could make, you know, policy decisions and funding allocation decisions, both in the public sector and the private sector, and just make a commitment to treating, you know, hepatitis wherever it may arise. And to also especially focus on underserved, under-resourced communities whose healthcare access, you know, larger healthcare access is kind of sporadic. You know, transportation can be a big issue for folks. Language access, we find that is a big issue for folks. Even folks who are coming from Asia, you know, have language access issues, and we cannot rely, you know, on family to be, you know, the translators in the medical setting. We need a vibrant, vital public health infrastructure that not just works on hepatitis, but all communicable diseases and, you know, preventative care. Preventative care works, so let's do it here as well.
Well, and I really look to, when we think about the group that is available, that is in the same location, I kind of say we need to start by, you've got a population of people that I don't think are getting the services they need in our prison system.
Oh, most definitely.
And they're physically there. You don't have to reach out to give them treatment. They are there. So that's another group that I really think we need to look at.
I've heard rumors that our public safety division has bought a whole host of fibrosis machines. Whether they'll be put up to use, that's another question.
Well, and if we can find a way to get to people who are at the highest risk. You mentioned earlier that it may be people who are unhoused. It may be people who have a history of drug use. They took away the sobriety requirements so that if you did still put yourself at risk, but you treated your current significant condition of hepatitis C, that would hopefully help to eradicate what you do have. So there are some definite moves in the right direction to try and help identify this patient population. And you also discuss surveillance. If we don't know who has it, how are we going to know who to treat?
Yeah, exactly.
So getting some of this data, I think, really will help us to achieve. You mentioned it's 2030. That's the HEP-free status date?
That's soon upon us. We're sticking to it until we really have to extend it. Yeah,
that's our deadline. Okay, so by 2030, we want to eradicate hepatitis, which will help to reduce the incidence of other problems, including liver cancer and other types of problems like liver cirrhosis and sequelae accordingly from that. Well, I really want to thank you for sharing your expertise with us today. Nikos Leverins, he is Grants and Advancement Manager, Hawaii Health and Harm Reduction Center. They are trying to do their best to help reduce the harm to populations here in the islands and help everyone to achieve their maximal health goals. If you'd like to hear the show again, you can click on hpr.org. You can follow the links to The Body Show. You can also find us on the HPR app. Our engineer is David Chong. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak, and we'll be right here next week, as we are every Monday at 6:30 on Hawaii Public Radio. We'll see you then.